Turn to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11 is where we're going to start today. And apologize in advance, we'll probably jump around to several different scriptures. Today, I'd like to ask the question, is God real? I believe that this is the most important question that man has to answer. Today, I don't want to look at that, though, from a standpoint of evolution versus creation, but I want to know if God is real to you. In Hebrews 11, verse 6, it says, without faith, it is impossible to please Him. And we talk a lot about our Christian faith. We talk about sharing our faith or building our faith. But what is faith? Let's read Hebrews 11, verses 1. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. I've read that verse several times, and it's kind of hard for me to sum that up into a word or two. But let's skip down to Hebrews 11, verse 6 again. But without faith, it is impossible to please Him. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. So today, when we use the word faith, I want to think of faith as that confident trust that we have in God. And I want us to remember that this is necessary for us to have to be pleasing to God. So I don't want to get too bogged down with the definition, but I want to think about how we can know if we have faith today. And I want to ask, if a book was written about your life, would it be said that you were a man or a woman of faith? And when you think about that, it should be, because we know that we have to have faith to be pleasing to God. And hopefully after this lesson, it's my goal that you will be encouraged to strengthen your faith. In Revelation chapter 2, verse 10, it says, do not fear any of those things which you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested. And you will have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. I think as Americans, we are very rich, and I think many of us are very spoiled. And that's caused us, or helped cause us, to become too comfortable. Everything that we do, it's so instantaneous. And anything that you can think of that would satisfy one of your desires is just literally a click away. And I think that also helps us to live in fear. Because we have so much, we have a lot to lose. And, well, what do we have to lose? Well, we have our time. We have our money, self-respect. I mean, you can fill in the blank of whatever it is that you hold valuable. And one way I think that we exhibit this fear is by making excuses. So if you find yourself making excuses, I think that you're acting out of fear and not out of faith. I've been guilty before of calling excuses rationalizations. I think we have a good example of that in Exodus chapter 3 with Moses at the burning bush. If you'd like to turn to Exodus chapter 3. So this is where God comes and speaks to Moses through the burning bush. I don't want to take the time to read everything, but we'll start in Exodus chapter 3 and verse 9. And I want you to listen and see, you know, God has come to Moses and given him a mission And Moses is replying to God and telling him why Moses himself isn't really the best candidate. And, maybe God has made the wrong decision here. Chapter 3, verse 9. "Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppress them. Come now, therefore, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?" So he said, "I will certainly be with you, and this shall be a sign to you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain." Then Moses said to God, "Indeed, when I come to the children of Israel and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they say to me, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" So, in the verses following, Moses, he begins to make these excuses, and we can skip over to chapter 4, verse 1. "Then Moses answered and said, 'But suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose they say, "The Lord has not appeared to you."'" And then down in verse 10, "Then Moses said to the Lord, 'Oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and slow of tongue.'" So in this passage, God is continually showing Moses miracles, and he's kind of removing the reasons that Moses is making these excuses. But I think that Moses already has his mind made up to go in the direction that Moses wants to. We see down in verse 13, Moses finally just kind of gives up because God removes all of these reasons for his excuses and says, "Oh my Lord, please send by the hand of whomever else you may send." So he's saying, "Please, Lord, if you can find anybody but me." And then if we look at verse 14, the first part says, "So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses." So obviously this is something that wasn't pleasing to God. And we know that Moses did lead the children of Israel out of Egypt, but he sure was contrary to start. Now I want to flip over to Genesis chapter 6, and I want to read a story that I think has quite a contrast to the one that we just read. And this is about Noah. Genesis chapter 6, let's read verse 13 and 14. Genesis 6, 13 and 14. "And God said to Noah, 'The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and outside with pitch.'" So as we think back about all the excuses that Moses made, and I read this story, I kind of thought to myself, well, Noah didn't make any excuses, but I think that he could have. He could have said, "Well, Lord, I'm 500 years old and his old bones, they just really don't work like they used to. Or I'm really the only person who believes in you in the world, and people are going to really make fun of me if I start building a boat here." He could have said, that's going to be a lot of work, and it's just me doing that. Or he could have said, "Well, in this economic climate, I don't know if I could afford all that wood. Or I'm really not an animal lover." And I could go on, right? We can always think of reasons why we can't do things. And I think that a lot of times we do that. But we see that Noah found favor with God. In chapter 6, verse 9, says, this is the genealogy of Noah. "Noah was a just man, perfect in all his generations. Noah walked with God." What does that mean, to walk with God? Well, I think verse 22 tells us, "Thus Noah did according to all that God commanded him, so he did." And it repeats it in chapter 7, verse 5, "And Noah did according to all the Lord commanded him." So that's not always easy to do all that the Lord commands us. But let's take a little bit of time to think about when we make excuses. Maybe we make excuses to our spouse, maybe to other family members or friends. Maybe you make excuses to yourself, maybe to make yourself feel better about why you think you can't or aren't doing something. But I think that sometimes we make excuses to the Lord for not doing His will. And this isn't pleasing to Him. I think that we saw that with Moses. And I think in Matthew 25, with the parable of the talents, we see that again. I'd like to read that. The last part of the parable of the talents in Matthew chapter 25. Matthew 25, and we'll start in verse 24. Matthew 25, 24. Then he who had received the one talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown, and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid, and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. But the Lord answered and said to him, You wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown, and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I would have received back my own with interest. So in talking about this fear, the one here in the parable says he was afraid, but Jesus calls him wicked and lazy. So Jesus will give us everything that we need to get the job done. And I'd like to take a moment to make an application of that. A few weeks back, it was announced that we were going to meet together and have a little meeting about personal evangelism. I want you to think back, and when that was being announced, what were you thinking about? Were you thinking about reasons that maybe you couldn't or shouldn't go to that meeting? Or were you thinking that it's God's commandment for me to go and preach and save the lost, and the Lord's providing an opportunity for me to get better at this, and so I'm going to use that tool that I can? So were you thinking out of fear or out of faith? I hope that the same couldn't be said of us that was said to the church in Ephesus, that we've lost our first love. You know, to be quite honest, I was embarrassed when I started to think about all the times that I make excuses to myself. And it made me think back when I was in high school and playing football. I played on the offensive line. And during passes, it was my responsibility to block the backside or the blind side of the quarterback. And I recall one time I didn't get my job done. And my coach, you know, just starts screaming at me. And I felt obligated to explain, well, why I couldn't get it done. It wasn't really my fault, coach, And he said something to me that I've tried to take and apply throughout all life. He says, look, Alton, if our quarterback gets smashed in the back of the head in the middle of a game and he gets, you know, carted off in an ambulance, that's your responsibility. It doesn't really matter if, you know, your shoe was untied or whatever, you know, whatever the excuse is. The fact is that the job doesn't get done. So we can't allow the current circumstances that we're in to dictate our decisions and our actions. But the good thing is that all these things that the Lord asks us to do, we don't have to do them by ourselves. And in Isaiah chapter 41, I think it illustrates this quite well. Isaiah chapter 41, I'd like to read verses 10 through 13. Isaiah 41, starting in verse 10. Fear not, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Behold, all those who were incensed against you shall be ashamed and disgraced. They shall be as nothing, and those who strive with you shall perish. You shall seek them and not find them. Those who contended with you, those who war against you, shall be as nothing, as a non-existent thing. For I, the Lord your God, will hold your right hand, saying to you, fear not, I will help you. I think that sometimes fear can be a heavy burden for us. But I'd like to think about fear as kind of this anchor that's in the ground. And we're holding on to that rope, and it's hard to move because that anchor is, you know, it's stuck there. But all we have to do is let go of the rope, and we can move. And I think that that's what God is telling us here in this passage. He says, come and hold my hand and walk with me. And I think that when we have faith, it allows us to overcome the seemingly impossible. We were out at the lake a few weeks back, and my wife jumps into the water, and then a few minutes later, she gets out and says, oops, I left my phone in my pocket. And I said, well, was the phone on when you jumped in? Yeah. I said, okay, I'm buying a new phone. I wasn't happy about that. And, you know, Brent was there, and he says, oh, Alton, it's okay. You just take it apart and let the sun dry it out, and then it'll work. No worries. And I said, hey, Brent, you listen here. I've got a degree in electronics, and I'm pretty smart. I can tell you that when you mix electronics and water, it's not good. But Brent, being the good friend that he is, decided to not listen to me and take the phone apart anyway. Later on, I get home that night, put the phone back together, and it works. So I'm not suggesting that that God miraculously healed the phone. But what I want us to gather from that is that Brent believed that the phone could work when I didn't. So if he hadn't have had the faith that the phone would work, it never would have worked. Why? Because I would have never tried to turn it back on. Because I knew that it wouldn't. So, I think that our brain gets in the way sometimes. And I think that we all have tendencies sometimes to look at situations and prejudge them. You know, we see people in the world, maybe it's our coworkers, our neighbors, family, and we say, well, these people, they're not going to change. They can't be saved. Well, maybe that's true. But what about the kid who killed the giant with the slingshot? What about the one who persecuted Christians to death and then changed his life and wrote most of the New Testament? What about the one who was on death row who was saved? I've told this story before, but I really enjoy telling it, so I'm going to tell it again. I met my friend Dustin online. He lives in Georgia, and he was divorced, and he was struggling with money, and you know, everything seemed to be going bad. You know, I just talked to him every once in a while, and talked to him a couple times on the phone. I actually met him in person at a motorcycle rally once, and you know, so after we corresponded a little bit, he decided that he wanted to get baptized. And I was just floored. And then he actually even took the initiative to go and find himself a church and start worshiping. And lo and behold, not too long after that, his ex-wife started coming, and she was baptized. And after she was baptized, they were remarried, and then they had a son. And then the daughter that they'd had from the previous time that they were married was baptized. And recently, Dustin's wife, Chrissy's sister, was murdered by her own husband. And they had a son who happened to be the same age as their new son, Seth. And so they ended up adopting their nephew. You know, somewhere in there's a lesson about the providence of God, and I won't take time to speak to that. But I just want us to pull from that, I mean, I couldn't, you know, you look back a couple of years ago and you couldn't have imagined that something like that would happen. But if we think about all these stories about David and Goliath and about Paul, what is the what's the common denominator there? Well, it's God. Let's look at Matthew chapter 17. Matthew chapter 17, starting in verse 14. And when they had come to the multitude, a man came to him, kneeling down to him and saying, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is an epileptic and suffers severely, for he often falls into the fire and often into the water. So I brought him to your disciples, but they could not cure him. Then Jesus answered and said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him here to me. And Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of him. And that child was cured from that very hour. Then the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, Why could we not cast it out? So Jesus said to them, Because of your unbelief, for assuredly I say to you, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, Move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. And then let's skip over to James chapter 5. I think it has a similar message. James chapter 5, verses 14 through 16. James 5, verses 14 through 16. Is anyone among you sick? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer of faith will save the sick, and the Lord will raise him up. And if he has committed sins, he will be forgiven. Confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. So what is all this healing, this moving mountains talking about? Well, I think that Jesus tells us in Matthew chapter 19, verse 26, he says, But Jesus looked at them and said to them, With men this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. So let us note here that it's not how strong our faith is, but it's how much we are trusting in God. So it's God who allows us to overcome these impossible things. And really, I wouldn't be up here preaching if I didn't think that it was possible for God to do a little bit of good through me. In Hebrews chapter 11 again, this time in verses 36, Hebrews 11 starting in 36, says, Still others had trials of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. We don't wander in the mountains today. I don't think any of us here today are destitute. I can't think of anyone who's been put in prison for Christ's cause. But these people here believed that there was something better afterwards, and they believed in God, and that helped them to get through those impossible things. Matthew chapter 10, Jesus is talking to his disciples and his apostles, sending them out to preach. Matthew chapter 10, starting in verse 7. "And as you go, preach, saying, 'The kingdom of heaven is at hand.' Heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. Provide neither gold nor silver nor copper in your money belts, nor bag for your journey, nor two tunics, nor sandals, nor staffs, for a worker is worthy of his food." Now that's a tall order. You say, okay, you go and you preach. Don't bother taking any money. You don't need a suitcase where you're going. You know what? Don't even bother with your shoes. So where does your trust lie? Is it in your own abilities or in God? But how do we get stronger faith if we don't have it? I really think that the solution to that, the answer to that question, is simple. That doesn't mean that it's easy. Romans chapter 10, verse 17 says that faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. So, good place to start to get stronger faith is to read your Bible and to listen to what the Lord is telling you. As a side note, watching TV and movies isn't going to build your faith. Abraham was a faithful man. Let's look at his example in Galatians chapter 3 and verse 5. Galatians chapter 3, verse 5 and 6. It says, "Therefore, he who supplies the Spirit to you and works miracles among you, does he do it by works of the law or by the hearing of faith? Just as Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness." So we see here that Abraham believed. Well, let's look at James's comments in James chapter 2. James chapter 2 and verse 19. He says, "You believe that there is one God, you do well. Even the demons believe and tremble." So we see that Abraham believed, but James is telling us maybe there's a little bit more to that. Verse 20, "But do you want to know, O foolish man, that faith without works is dead? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered Isaac his son on the altar? Do you see that faith was working together with his works, and by works faith was made perfect? Just as and the scripture was fulfilled, which says, 'Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God.' You see that a man is justified by works and not by faith only." I have another lake story. I have a friend who has never really swam before, and we were out there at the lake with her, and we were trying to get her to swim, but she was perfectly fine with just admiring the water. And we said, "Well, you just put this life jacket on. You don't have to know how to swim. You just float around, and it's really nice." So let me ask a question. If she told us, "Well, I believe you that life jacket, it'll keep me afloat," and she just stood on the bank and never got in, is that faith? I think that that's a dead faith. But a strong faith is when she put the life jacket on and she jumped in the water, even though she couldn't swim. So today, as we sit comfortably in our building and we profess that we believe God and that He will reward us for doing His will, let's think about these things. Let us truly believe that the Lord will provide for us, and let's not hesitate to go when we are called. Let's let our actions show that we truly do trust in Him and not allow fear to hinder us. And let's not allow our own minds to limit what we can do with God. I have one more passage and then the lesson's yours. It's in Matthew chapter 14. Matthew chapter 14, this is where Jesus walked on the water. Let's read verses 22 through 31. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get in the boat and go before him to the other side, while he went and sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. Now when evening came, he was alone there. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. Now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It's a ghost." And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer. It is I. Do not be afraid." And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." So he said, "Come." And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. In a spiritual sense, none of us can swim. We all need that life jacket. And that life jacket is Jesus. Without Jesus to take our hand, we're all sinking. If you don't have Jesus today, you're treading water and time is running out. Do you believe Jesus when he says that his yoke is easy and his burden is light? If you do believe, then don't wait. Act upon that belief. If there's anything that we can do to assist you, please come forward as we stand and sing.